Got it. Here we go. Tom and Curly Show. You write to us at mynorthwest.com. We welcome all those letters or texting as well at 98973. Sean, if you wouldn't mind, please let the horses in. There they are. All right. There's Lady Treasure making her way in now. And Sir Captain Little Bits also very much a... with the parade, and if we bring the microphone in just a little... Oh, the teeny tiny... Oh, look at this, Tom. Teeny is being held there in place by the mayor from San Francisco.
We are practicing our favorite song.
I don't care where you're sitting. You're going to get up and start dancing.
Okay?
I got up and started dancing because I was feeling the spirit.
Well, who can blame you?
When the spirit moves you because yeah. you are watching history in the making, Bay Area royalty perform... Yeah. I don't know about you, but I'm not going to turn around and look for where my mask is.
Can we just try singing the song?
Yeah, come on, Teeny. There we go. Yeah. Look at her.
New
look
theme
her.
Song for our show.
Look at Teeny getting down. There she is, moving around. Getting that jar all steamed up. All right. She's got... Look at her. Wow, she's doing the weird thing. She's got the twerking going on. Diving in the news! Watching the teeny twerk, huh? Jacob, look at you making her twerk, huh? Ashamed of yourself?
No, I didn't. It's not my fault.
All right. Here comes Hannah. All right, H. Scott.
Hello.
They were, the mayor says that, hey, I found 50, what are they, 20 million, 50 million? How much money is this? What are we talking about?
It's 50 million on top of 28 million. It's all, she has, it's basically money from... The city of Seattle some, that mm-hmm. has some federal dollars, and then there's also all of the investment we've talked about a couple of times, I think, that the state legislature put in this last session in the capital budget. So it's a little mix of all of that money.
Okay.
And this is all an effort to get more people housed. She talked a little about it back in June at a press conference that I was at, she and Andrew Lewis, Councilmember Andrew Lewis, and today mm-hmm. there was an update. The idea is to rapidly house some folks. So here's what she's talking about.
In June, we stood together to announce that $28 million of Seattle Rescue Plan money would go towards the rapid acquisition of properties. And today, we are proud to announce the first awards for those rapid acquisitions. With joint city and Washington state funding of $50 million, we've acquired three brand new buildings with a total of 165 new rent and income-restricted studio units that will serve individual and young adults experiencing homelessness or at extreme risk of becoming homeless.
All right.
All right. The buildings are located.
These buildings are in the transit-rich Capitol Hill area with easy access to jobs and services. Today's investment means that tenants will be able to move into these brand new homes this fall. Right now in Seattle, before the pandemic, it took about 3 to 4 years to complete new developments and cost over $350,000 a unit. This ability, this anomaly in the market that Emily Alvarado and others recognized and were able to take advantage of, gives us immediate ability to house people at a lower cost.
Mm. And now, this is a big deal because this is permanent supportive housing. This is...
Yeah.
That's, as Andrew Lewis, I think, said in this press conference, is that's the only solution to homelessness, right? So, because we have the transitional housing, you have to go there and you wait for a while and then you wait for the permanent supportive housing, but there's really no turnover in that and we don't have enough of it. So the more they can build, the faster we're going to get kind of a visible difference and get everybody off the street. Until this is done and there's enough for everyone who needs it, they'll still be encampments and tents and all of that.
Okay.
So, that's why this was an exciting announcement. And moving forward, here's what she means.
Lehigh will own all three buildings and will be operator of two of the buildings. Youth Care will operate the third. And we know that homeless youth is such an important part of what strategies we have to address.
Okay, so can I just put the numbers? Okay, so I looked up. So right now, the city of Seattle, so that's about 50 million plus you said another 28 million. And then Seattle has 5,500 homeless. They are spending 160 million to combat homelessness. So this is including in that. So altogether, divide all of those numbers together, add up all the money, put it into the number of homeless. That's $43,000 per person.
It's a lot.
That's just a one-time shot. These are permanent buildings that the people will be able to live in.
I know. 43,000.
City owns the buildings.
City owns the buildings, right. Yeah. And is it going to be low barrier, low entry, or is it also we build the buildings at $300,000 per unit, and then is there also services included in that for the person, or can they continue to drink and do drugs and everything else? Is it low
everything
barrier?
Is a housing first model right now, for pretty much in the city. So
okay.
That means that's not the most... the biggest priority, but then they have supports. When we talk about permanent supportive housing, they have various supports to try to address those types of issues as well. Now, this is existing buildings. They are not building these from scratch. They are existing buildings that, because of the downturn in the market, in the real estate market during COVID, were available at much less expensive than they normally would have been, was her point. So that's why she's talking about this rapid ability.
Yes.
That's really fascinating to me that so... Is it because, I mean, the housing market never, chilled, but the office building or the buildings market themselves? Because Capitol Hill, I would think, would be prime real estate. I'm surprised and happy that they got such good stuff.
And I think part of this was part of the deal with the a program that Commerce has going as well, the State Department of Commerce. But this was meant to be, she said, studio apartments up on Capitol Hill, and however it worked out, it was towards the beginning, I think, that they started this deal where they were able to buy these rapidly. It's something similar that she announced back in June. I believe that was over in Ballard when we got the last announcement. But so it's not hotels like we did in King County. It's a little bit better. It's a little bit better. But then this is 165 units of here, and they'll be online by fall for people to move in. But she also talked about some other investments that are ongoing and longer term, where there'll be like 1,300 units to come online, not all permanent supportive housing, but in throughout and the next year, basically, is what she said.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes when these kinds of places go in, there are neighbors that are unhappy. Is there any sense that Capitol Hill might object to the fact that these buildings are in their midst?
Have you been to Capitol Hill?
Yes,
no, sorry. I couldn't resist.
Wow. No, I know. That's good. Okay.
Yeah, good.
Not that
just
I have
checking.
Seen. And
yes,
if you're going to be in a neighborhood in Seattle, that is, going to be the more supportive for this type of thing.
Okay.
Good.
So we'll throw more money at it. And this is to get them off the street and to put them in housing. And about 300,000
at them.
You're going to throw housing at them, right? And so
permanent supportive, though. It's,
right.
It makes all the difference.
So I took the number out that you guys had a problem with, the $75 million, the 50 plus the other. So they spend $23,000 per person per year in the city of Seattle for the 5,500 people that are homeless. I just took the $160 million that we're spending. So generally, the question will be, will we have more homeless? And will we continue to spend more money on the homeless problem if you're giving them housing, if you don't come around the backside and have something to do with the problems that have caused the homeless problem in the first place? In most cases, a person has become so isolated from families and friends because of drug and alcohol and mental illness, although the city of Seattle gives you some line that only 20-some percent of people actually have a drug or alcohol problem that are homeless. And most people that work in these industries know that that's not true. But that's the number that they tell you because they don't want to make it seem like it's a drug or alcohol problem. They want you to make seem like it's Amazon's problem, it's the landlord problem, it's the rent problem, when really most people that know, most of the people that are on those streets are dealing with mental illness, some other causes, and they're self-medicating with drugs and alcohol. But overall, the mayor has found, amazingly, another $50 million to throw at the problem. And as Tom points out, now you're going to get a neighbor who's got a house next door with how many people in each one of these units? 10, 20, 30 people that may or may not be having drug and alcohol problems. So we'll see what happens. But here we go. This is the city of Seattle.
Couple of points I want to make. It's not
just
the city of Seattle. This is a partnership. That's what makes this innovative and new and different, is that they've got some state dollars and some city dollars and some federal dollars all wrapped up in this this effort. And it's honestly, they're saying it's the first. It's a big, important, concrete step toward finally resolving this crisis, because it is this permanent supportive housing. It's this new model where you've got, you've all often heard Mayor Jenny Durkin say, we can't solve this alone as mm-hmm. Seattle. We need help from the state. We need help from the federal government. And that's what this is an example of.
Okay.
And it's small. So it's, but it's not the typical thing like you've seen in the past where they every year have the budget for the homeless and they throw all this money for these various things out. It's not like that, but we'll need to see the follow up once these people are moved in as to how they do.
Right? Okay. Yep. All right.
So we'll get back to you on that. But there's more housing news.
Do you
want to hear some more things?
Yes.
Yes. There's a lot of people, more than 60,000 people in the state, who are facing eviction, possibly. We've got another eviction moratorium about to end here in about 10 days. That is the bridge gap eviction moratorium that Governor Inslee announced back in the end of June, I believe, when the original one was expiring. Basically, mm-hmm. what this one did was... as long as you're, as a person behind on your rent, making an effort to pay that rent, dealing with your landlord, making some sort of arrangement, that kind of thing, you cannot be evicted. That's where we are right now, because the idea is we needed to wait to get the federal dollars that are available to help renters and landlords, that assistance. It's really slow getting that money into the hands of these people. Really, really slow in King County, especially. And it's still not ready. So there are concerns about letting this bridge eviction moratorium expire here mm-hmm. in 10 days. Nicole Macri, Representative Nicole Macri, is a Democrat, and she spoke to me earlier, late last week, I should say, about her concerns about this.
I'm very concerned that people still need protection. I think we need to continue to protect people from eviction. We have stood up rent assistance programs across the state. They have gone slower than we would have liked. And that's in part because we're standing up a brand new kind of social support system that's never existed before and doing it at an enormous scale. And so while our governments have been working quickly and working with their community partners to get resources out, they haven't gotten out fast enough. And at the same time, the federal unemployment programs have ended. And I'm hearing from many constituents who now remain unemployed and have no unemployment. And so I'm very worried about the prospects of a lot of people getting evicted in the months to come.
And she's not the only one who's worried. And there are talks going on with Governor Inslee trying to get him to possibly consider yet another extension on this. That has landlord groups, of course, very concerned, including the Rental Housing Association. And they told me, I hadn't thought about this, I hadn't done the math, that the problem is even if we get all this rental assistance out to people who are maybe 12 months behind on their rent, we're 18 months into this, and there are people who are 18 months behind on their rent. So where do you, how do you close that gap? There's not enough assistance for that, period. So
that's an interesting fact, if that's the case.
Yes.
Yeah, because I kept thinking, if the money is there and it's just not distributed, just wait, get the money out. But if it's not enough to cover, we'll still have to deal with the same kind of, I guess it'd be a smaller crisis, because not that wouldn't be true of everybody.
Because every month
still,
you wait, then there's more, there's another month. It just keeps tallying up, and who knows how long.
How many jobs are available for people that are not going in and filling those jobs?
Lots of jobs.
If I didn't have to pay, when I was renting, that's the biggest part of your expense, right? It's supposed to be 30%, but it never was. I was living in New York, it was 50%, so my dad used to say to me, your first 2 weeks of work, you're paying the landlord. The other 2 weeks are for you. And he said, think about that going into work. So it's the biggest expense you have. Well, if you don't have to pay that big expense, why go into work? And if the government's going to send you $300 a week plus unemployment, and you can make money just by sitting at home and not having to pay the rent, well, now you have to pay the rent. So maybe you want to get off the couch and go fill one of those jobs. There are lots and lots of jobs. I realize maybe they don't pay what you need them to pay, but then that's just the case of the marketplace.
But they might. Listen, grocery stores that are starting people at $20 an hour. There's one across from my house.
Right. Plus the outrageous city council that determines you can risk your life if you're a grocery store worker, we'll give you an extra $4 an hour. So you could make altogether, you're going to make $24 an hour, right? A 40-hour week. Right. That's not a bad living. And maybe the apartment's too much. So maybe you need to take our roommate in. But no, in this case, this person talks about how we need to continue to help people. I have an idea. Why don't you just stop helping them and allow them, as an adult, they're adults, get a job, pay the bills, pay the landlord, work it out. Why is the government coming in and continuing to coddle people that should be able to stand up on their own 2 feet?
I don't have that answer. Tom?
I don't think they're coddling them. They're trying to make the best of a bad situation. But now you can't just get unemployment willy-nilly like we when the COVID first hit, the pandemic first hit. So you do have to now look for a job. And my guess is, my hunch is that the people that are behind in rent might even have jobs now, but if they've been behind in rent the entire time, that could be problematic. Uh-huh. I understand, though. We're at that weird transitional time, and mm-hmm. at some point, the rubber's going to have to meet the road, and there will be some people that will have to be evicted.
It's now.
Yes. Yes. The issue right now, though, that I think, just to give it a slightly different kind of spin, that may sound like a lot, 60,000 people in arrears, or at least not haven't paid or behind, but that is half the national average. We here in Seattle have actually done a great job. It's only 7% of the people that are renting are in this kind of situation. The national average is 14%. Mm-hmm. And in other places, someplace like Miami, it's unbelievable. It's something like 50% or something. So as bad as it is here, it's not as bad. It's better than in most places.
By the way, we didn't get to the fact that a bunch of people that don't understand economics were protesting over the weekend.
No, but we're going to talk about that tomorrow because it's going to be talked about at City Council tomorrow. And I've got the Rental Housing Association. I got all kinds of people. There are three proposals that are going to be talked about tomorrow at Seattle City Council that are rent control, 180-day notice for rent increases, and then mandatory paying your tenants when you hike the rent, John. Mandatory paying the tenants to relocate when they can't afford your rent hike.
Well, that will certainly
all about them tomorrow.
That's good. That's good tease. That'll certainly encourage more people to want to build apartments. All right, Tracy Taylor's got a look at traffic for us. There we go, Bucky's Auto Service Centers. That's right. They've got 16 locations. They've been around for 50 years. Coming up on 51, I think, in March. Bucky's Auto Service Centers. All right. I'm heading over to Dougie's for a big barbecue tonight, Tom.
Wear your mask.
I'm trying to get him to continue to lose weight because I need him to be around. So I buy very expensive steaks, and we sit in his garage and eat them off of our laps on paper plates. And then
at least the ones you don't bury in your yard.
You know, Jacob, this seems to be a real fascination that I bury meat in my yard with you. It's weird. Okay.
Why don't you get him go running with you?
Tom, the guy's like 300-some pounds.
Well, okay, walk then.
He's got a bad knee. That's a very complicated thing. I'll explain more later. Pfizer and BioNTech say, hey, they got a COVID vaccine for your kids. That's right, 5 to 11-year-olds. So this was a 12 and older, now 5 to 11. Now they say they've worked it out, so go ahead and get it. Your chances of your kid, if your kid doesn't have secondary conditions like asthma, reduced immune system because of cancer, leukemia, diabetes, and other things like that, chances of the kid getting COVID, going into the hospital and dying, actually slim to none. But if your kid does have secondary conditions, this is in Ireland anyway, they're saying, go ahead, if you'd like, go ahead and vaccinate your kid now that these vaccines are available. 5 to 11.
So I hadn't heard that. So Ireland's approved it because this is just an announcement on Pfizer's part in a news release, and they haven't released any of the data, so nobody's acting on it just yet. But it sounds like by the end of the month, we may have that information, and then I assume it would be approved and be available. But so Ireland's already jumped the gun.
If your kid is susceptible to and has, you know, other conditions, then, you know, and COVID could push them over to the point of being, you know, needing to be hospitalized in ICU, then take this recommendation. If not, they're not going to mandate. It'll be interesting to see if the government comes in and tries to mandate kids 5 to 11 in order to be in school. I hope that's not the case, because I know a lot of parents would not want to give their kids that, because the chances of the kids getting COVID or passing COVID on has been proven to be very, very slim. I was surprised to see that 60% of Americans get their kids vaccinated for the flu. I didn't think it was going to be that high. 43% of Americans, adults, get the flu vaccine. But kids as young as 6 months old all the way up can get a flu vaccine, and about 60% do that.
My hunch is that I wonder if you can get them all at the same time. You know, like we kids, parents have to get kids to make sure their shots are up to date before they start a new school year. And I wonder if in that process, they sort of say, okay, well, yeah, let's go ahead and get the flu shot.
Well, the mumps, rubella, the chicken pox, yeah. All that other stuff, right?
Yeah.
But in this case, again, why give the kid the vaccine if the kid's chance of getting COVID, being seriously sick, and having to go in the hospital is so small? Well, I wouldn't take the chance because about it's about 60 in a million, the kids, especially boys, will have some sort of chest pain or an inflamed heart. So I just wouldn't do it for my kid because the chance of him getting sick, very, very small.
The inflammatory heart condition, that is the one concern, the side effect that has people concerned. It's very rare. They say all the cases have been mild and they improve quickly.
Yeah.
So I guess the concern for that might be similar to your concern for COVID. If you're concerned about the severity of COVID in your kid, that also it would be balanced by the concern for the severity of this. In both cases, it sounds like they're pretty mild. By the way, just for clarification's sake, the dose you're getting is one third the dose that the adults or kids from 12 and up are getting. That's what they decided to experiment with. Yeah, I don't know what the status will be in terms of expectations. I know it's so odd for me to hear a lot of parents are really anxious to have their kids get this, because usually you only hear from the parents that don't want to have their kids vaccinated. In this case, there's a pressure from parents to have this happen. I don't know what the percentage breakdown is.
When a greater percentage of kids die of the flu than die of COVID, but yet are those same parents also getting the kids a flu shot? I don't know. I haven't seen the comparison cross on those numbers. I know that Fauci had said today that more kids have died of COVID than of the flu. That's simply not true, but that doesn't seem to stop Fauci from continuing to throw this stuff out there. There's a study that came out of Harvard looking at hospitalizations. What's that, Tom?
I just think if Fauci said it, he must have some numbers. We'd have to compare whatever numbers you have with his numbers. I don't think he's lying. You think he's trying to misrepresent the truth?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't, but okay, we'll have to check
simply dismiss his argument because he's looking at 18 months. The flu study is a year. That's 12 months. He's got 18. And the numbers of kids that died of COVID, no, they don't die. They can die with or die of, which leads us to the next story, a study out of Harvard looking at hospitalization and finding out that about 50% of the hospitalization numbers, the person comes in, as we said before, they're complaining of something else. They're not presenting as a COVID patient. They take a test. The test then says they have COVID, and they're in there. They get marked as COVID. So when you hear Jay Inslee or you listen to the news here talk about cases and hospitalizations, COVID patients overrunning surging hospitals, you find out from this study that 50% are not in there for COVID, but they have COVID. Asymptomatic or mild symptoms, but they're not being treated for it. But the number we're told is COVID hospital patients. And now this study says 50% really wouldn't make it into that category because they don't really, they're not coming in as a COVID patient.
Yeah, I think this is really interesting. What they said, the numbers we get are not based on severity. And so they did a VA hospital, which is not exactly, ideal to compare all hospitals, but it's our first good solid number that about half of the people, the thing about VA hospitals is they test everybody for everything when they first come in. And so a lot of COVID cases that might not even have been, made aware of, register. And I think that's right. So half the hospitalizations are not serious versions of COVID. The problem with this, though, is that they're still in the hospital. They may be in the hospital for other reasons, but the idea that hospitals are filling up still is true in the hospitals where they are filling up. It's just with people with other conditions and people with COVID are filling them up. And so if you suddenly had some kind of a brain tumor you needed surgery on, or heart surgery, or cancer, this or that, that would be a backlog. But yeah, and the thing is, I think the difference, this is the kind of information that you always throw at me at there's some kind of untoward purpose behind this. This seemed to be a good analysis. They say that, at first, numbers have changed, and they didn't have this kind of information. It's not that the government or the medical community is trying to pull a fast one over us. It's just that these are the numbers they had to work with. Mm-hmm. And now, a year and a half into it, we have more information about the level of of danger. And I don't know that you can then apply, go back 6 months or 12 months and say the numbers were any, you know, were the same. They mm-hmm. think it's an evolving situation, but it certainly is interesting information. Yes,
it is.
And it proves
my point. I'm not saying it's nefarious. I'm just saying is the noble lie that comes from one, the government, and then the media that loving the statistic but not really giving you the full story because they love to scare you or to keep you frightened.
Absolutely.
Yes, well, that's what the media does. They don't.
It's
they're not
a
honest.
Lie,
they're not. It's not a lie. It's not a lie.
Okay. You it's, said it
no,
was
it's
a noble
half
lie.
Truth. The noble lie is someone like Fauci telling you, don't wear a mask. You don't need to wear a mask. But then he says, you know, it comes to herd immunity. I was going to say 70, but I didn't think people were ready for it. I think it's 80, but I'm not sure yet, so I'm not telling you. That's a noble lie. I'm giving you some of the information to get you to behave a particular. Not nefarious or not, right? It's the government the government giving you only some of the numbers because they treat you. Government treats everyone like they're 4 years old. Everyone is 4 years old.
They're 4 years old.
Everyone is 4 years old.
They give you the information that they have at the time.
No, they don't. No, they don't.
It's inadequate. Yes.
It is inadequate. Okay. And they distort the information in order to get you behave a particular way.
Well, yes, for the social good, yes.
Ah, that's right, social good, right. Because the president said it's not about freedom of choice. It's not about freedom. It's not about liberty. It's about what the president wants you to do. That's right. Tracy Taylor got traffic for us. What should we do, Tracy? Right, here we go. Sean, how did you do without me with the mailman song? Did you do well?
Yeah. No, actually, last Thursday and Friday, I wasn't here, so I didn't have to deal with the mailman.
All right, how you doing? Let's get started by that mailman song. By the way, Sean has trouble. He doesn't like the song, but he takes a deep breath, and he presses the button, tries to get all the way through. How you feeling on a Monday? Here we go.
I feel pretty good.
All right. Let's see if that translates into the whole song. Here we go. It's a Monday.
I'm the mailman.
Yeah.
I'm the mailman.
All right. All right.
Yes.
I'm the mailman. Yeah, you're like a mayor of San Francisco.
No.
Hello.
All right. Well, not bad. All right, Tom, we'll get to letter of the day, but first I take care of all the rest. Here we go.
Okay. We had a double top story about the Seahawks masking procedure and their big loss. So we'll start off with the masks business. Eric Rizzo says, I was at the game. Mm-hmm. Hardly anyone was wearing a mask. They didn't check ID for your COVID vaccination card either. Any random image saved on your phone of a vaccination card off the internet got you right in. Just stop with all the stupid rules and let people make a risk assessment for themselves.
Wouldn't that be nice? 360 says, big surprise. The only fans complaining about, quote, how difficult it was at the Seahawks game were the unvaccinated ones. Get vaccinated. You don't have to worry about getting a negative test every time you go to a game.
All right. And area code 206, lines were horrendous for food and many were not wearing masks.
Uh-oh.
No enforcement of masks. It was a joke.
Yes.
As a season ticket holder for 12 years, we will be selling our tickets and enjoying games from our couch just due to the food lines.
Yeah.
Wow, the food lines determine whether you go to a game or not.
Well, the food, you get food so that you can take the mask off and eat. It's all part of the nonsense from the government. Seahawks lost. 360 says, come on, guys. For years now, we've been called a second-half team. It's no wonder we didn't do it for ourselves when we didn't totally fall apart in the first half. It's like when your neighbor's dog doesn't bark at you, you start to worry about it. Okay.
Yeah. Can you win a game in the first quarter?
Yeah,
come on. Can you win a game in the second quarter? Area code 253. I'd be glad to abuse the privilege of using John's Seahawks seats.
All right, then. Hold on there, 253. You never know. Border control, 243. Or 425. Not to worry. Kamala Harris has the border crossing issue under control. She's getting to the root cause while doing a coin toss at a college football game. All is well.
I didn't know it. She did a coin toss.
Yeah, she did for Harvard against Howard.
Wow. Oh, perfect. She's a Howard graduate, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great. Area code 253. Everyone, Democrats and Republicans alike, all agree DACA kids should be given citizenship. Mm-hmm. The only reason it's held up is because they won't close the borders to prevent this from happening again.
Ah, 360, we should set it up so if you want to come, you can join the military and protect America, and when you're done, you're a citizen. I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, that's good.
Yep.
On John's buried garbage,
yes.
Almost said buried treasure, area code 253, I need to do some work on our property at Lake Coeur d'Alene in the next few weeks.
Yes.
Does John want me to stop and pick up his food waste on my way back to Western Washington and put it in my yard waste container? I will not, however, pick up his $23 steak.
That is gone. I looked for it. It's gone. Mayor London Breed, 425. Folks are upset with the San Francisco mayor, not because she wasn't wearing a mask, but because she set these mask rules, then didn't follow them.
Nick from Orcas, I haven't had the spirit move me like that since I heard John McEnroe shred a guitar and sing a ditty.
Oh, that's not fair. Is Teeny around? Teeny? Where's Teeny? Do you have Teeny there? Because I can't see her. Where's Teeny? Teeny? Tom? Teeny?
And now it's time.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Oh, no. Oh, I wish I had Tom do it.
Erica 206.
Yes.
That LeVar Burton story made me think. I wouldn't say John found the island of Tom and Curly so much as he washed ashore amidst the wreckage and busted timbers of a once majestic ship.
Oh, wow. Look at you, 206.
Ahoy.
I got some holes to dig, Jacob.
She left the gloom.
Another hour, though. Here we go.
My front door.